Hi, everybody. I'm sitting here with Mark Sue, who is a board certified family physician. Hi, Mark.
How's it going, Charlotte?
It's good, you know, just a beautiful day out there. So I'm happy for that. So let's catch up a little bit and share with the audience a little bit of your background of how you came to be a physician.
I have no family members in my immediate family or extended family who are physicians. Had one of those sort of life moments in college. I was already pre-med, didn't really assume I was going into medicine, but had the option and decided I really just wanted to do something that was really geared towards, it sounds trite, but just really helping people, serving people. So quite honestly, I didn't really have that much interest in the science of medicine. And didn't really until the last number of years in even professionally in my career. But it's really always about how to help people the most that I could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much you in a nutshell. I feel like you're always like in some really cool project that involves helping people, you know, medicine related. So
yeah, go into healthcare, have that initial interest, you know, yeah. of altruism and wanting to help people. Unfortunately, I think, it's unfortunate. I think just whether it's partly life and a lot of it's the healthcare system kind of, you know, creates sometimes it's a little bit of a jadedness. Sometimes it's, you know, it's not what we thought it was going to be because of various reasons. So it doesn't end up being, I think a lot of people end up being a little as practitioners, unfortunately. And it wasn't what they dreamed of, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think you've created a really cool practice. So why don't you explain to the audience how your practice works and what that looks like?
Yeah. So actually that's what I was thinking about when I was saying that. It was just kind of off the cuff here, but yeah, I mean, I think that was really the reason I was employed for 2003 for 11 years, 11 and a half years, and started this practice in 2014. I think a lot of it was because I knew over the previous years, several years leading into 2014, that there was more to medicine than just what I had been taught to date and was practicing. So, you know, I started getting into, so I was trained in an allopathic regular residency at Tufts University from 2000 to 2003. And somewhere around 2008 or so was introduced to functional medicine, the Institute of Functional Medicine, and realized that there was so much more to offer people. There were just so many more tools to get at, especially the chronic health problems that mainstream medicine in the US at least is not, it's not greatly adept at addressing. You know, we're great at emergency care in the US. Mm-hmm. We're great at trauma care and all that kind of stuff. You know, when it comes to chronic healthcare and complex conditions, there's a lot of room for improvement. So functional medicine came into the picture in my life in 2008, and in 2014 decided to, you know, start this practice because I wanted to create a space to be able to help those people that the mainstream system has some difficulty or some challenges, you know, on a systems level. Mm-hmm. Helping people with. And so so we have a concierge practice. You know, a lot of the intent in creating this practice was also to maintain and enhance the provider patient relationship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, much longer visits, a lot of convenience aspects. So, you know, patients have our email addresses, our text, our cell phone numbers, and you know, it's much more of a relationship built. And mm-hmm. those can often be just kind of trite terms and such, but I don't know. We've had, you know, we've had a number of patients who I've known for years prior to this practice. And it wasn't until, you know, two, three years into this practice. And they would say, well, I didn't realize that by myself. Or, you know, I never talked about that stuff with you because I never felt we had the time, you know, in the previous model, you know, basically implying with the previous model. So it's amazing how much we all still have to learn about ourselves, much less in the health aspects of who we are, much less to be able to have the space and time to talk about that with a provider and have the trust in that person to be able to open up, much less, you know, be guided down those roads. Yeah. So our office is large. It's the bread and butter. The foundations are a concierge practice for primary care. Mm-hmm. But we practice in a functional approach, meaning we really like to get at the root causes of why people are struggling through whatever they're struggling through. Mm-hmm. You know, some people don't want that. They just really like the convenience and access of the features of our practice, and that's fine. But I think most people at some point in our lives, we come across some health topic or more than one that warrant, you know, there's room to dig at root causes, you know, other than, oh, it's got to be just stress and, you know, anxiety, or it's got to be just need more sleep and exercise. Oh, it's just part of aging, you know, all that kind of the kind of typical answers, which I'm not criticizing, but I'm not a believer in those. You know, that's certainly not going to be our first assumption and recurrent response. There's right. just so many more tools in the toolbox to dig at. And then we do some consulting, of course, too, especially, and it's almost always on the functional medicine and what we call biotoxin patients mm-hmm. Subpopulation.
Yeah. So the two things I really want to focus on that you just shared that I felt really beneficial in my own process with medicine and relationship with medicine is the key of time, which I think is a lot of people are talking about in medicine and healthcare now of not having enough time. So that's mm-hmm. what I love about your practice is creating that time and relationship, because the time inevitably allows for that relationship. And, you know, one of my biggest quotes, I think it's actually on my website, is that 80 to 90% of healing in my mind is had that relationship with your provider. And I think, you know, in your practice that really allows for, you know, whether it's time or the concierge piece, that relationship to grow. As you said, many of your patients have said to you in switching over as you switch over to concierge. And I think I'll be fair in this too, that many people could open a concierge and be providing more time and maybe not always have that relationship piece, right? It doesn't always, time doesn't equal relationship, but I think that's what I would say is a secret sauce of yours, that I think you do a really great job in your practice of leading with your heart, and that altruistic part of why you entered medicine really shines in your practice, and knowing you for the past couple of years and how you work and what your intentions are. So I think it's important that the audience, you know, maybe hears a little bit of an objective view from my point of view, but so explain, you know, you are a family practice, so obviously you see things that are just basic, you know, daily ailments, but I know you also in the functional sense see a lot of more specific chronic disease. So can you speak to the audience a little bit about and highlight some of what you see, you know, whether it's Lyme, gut, etc.?
So probably the most prevalent, the most common subpopulation of folks we see in that area are what we call biotoxin patients. You know, there's we get a lot of people who come and say that they believe they have or have been diagnosed with Lyme disease. We get a lot of people who talk about just they're chronically fatigued. They have chronic pain, you know, fibromyalgia type problems, cognitive changes, maybe even outright memory loss, dementia fears, concerns, that kind of thing. Ultimately, we do find that nowadays, we as a practice talk about biotoxin patients a lot. We refer to a lot of folks in that term, but personally, I think of a lot of this stuff under an arising term called inflammaging. The term actually was thrown out probably in the early 2000s. I think it's at least 2003, if not even as early as 2000 in medical literature. But I still don't think it's a commonly used term even now, even among the more cutting edge integrative / functional medicine world. It's not that commonly used, but I absolutely see it coming. Inflammaging, it's that overlap between inflammation and aging. And it's really one and the same, which I think is what's really fascinating, being brought to more to the forefront right now with the COVID scenario, because aging essentially is rooted in inflammation. And what we're talking about is chronic low-level inflammation, what some people actually call quote-unquote sterile inflammation, meaning it's not really due to like an acute infection, but there's a constant drive at the body's immune system. And there's so much information coming out right now about the process of aging, how much it has to do with a dysfunctional or progressively insufficient or even compromised immune system. Mm-hmm. As highlighted again now with the COVID, like, you know, partly why is it that all these older people are so much more at risk? You know, and that's not necessarily real news. I mean, that happens with a variety of other conditions, but it's really, the question is being brought to light at a higher intensity level, you know? And so just case in point, like, we know now there's so much, there's a lot of hot topics going on right now to do with the thymus gland. Mm-hmm. And the thymus gland not degenerating usually since puberty. And then the question becomes how fast and how intensely is that degenerating? And all the message hormones that are coming out of the thymus gland are no longer around. Mm-hmm. A lot of the in the peptide world, right? Which regenerative medicine, stem cell peptide world. And the incredible benefits that people are getting out of regenerative medicine, especially through the peptide or in some cases stem cell world. And so ultimately this whole topic of inflammaging encompasses the big three pieces that that we look at when we're approaching almost anybody. I mean, it's more necessary in these biotoxin patients, but even your average person like my 9-year-old or my wife who had asthma and allergies, both of them have asthma and significant allergies and some eczema. There's a three-pronged approach that we think about. One is what are the environmental triggers?
Yeah.
And then number two is what is going on the body side, the immune system side, in reaction to those triggers.
Yep.
And the third is the interface. What is the interface between, you know, the foreign, if you will, and the self? And the gut, of course, is 70 to 80% of that interface. Mm-hmm. And so with under environmentally acquired triggers or acquired illnesses, we could be talking about subclinical infections. So they're not necessarily causing fever and, you know, outright congestion in the moment or whatnot, but yeah, that goes down the whole road of the whole tick-borne disease, which has got a whole bunch of little bugs within that tick. And then you've got the yeast and chronic yeast, acute yeast, you got parasites, you got all kinds of chronic viruses, mono, EBV, you know, CMV. Then you've got hidden gut infections a lot of people don't know about, hidden sinus infections, et cetera, et cetera. You got biotoxins, right? That's where you got the mold toxins and you got all these other toxins that come from other animals, plants, et cetera. Then you got non-biotoxins, the heavy metals, the pesticides, glyphosate, and et cetera. And then with the immune system, you got, you know, COVID has really brought this to light. You got the innate immune system, the adapted immune system. We find, when we go looking, we find all kinds of people who have immunodeficiency on paper and that they don't have sufficient antibodies. And people are just shocked that that's the case, because that's not something we look at in mainstream medicine unless, you know, the person's way down the road and super, super sick, and or they fit some specific diagnosis that it's common in practice to look for those things. We're looking at, you know, imbalances or what's often called the TH1, TH2 imbalances in the immune system. And, you know, there's a lot of things that can be measured. Unfortunately, there's a lot of things we can't measure well in the immune system, but nonetheless, we have a lot of tools, again, in the toolbox to assess that. And then, like you said, the gut health is just a humongous topic. I mean, how many people actually don't themselves or deal yeah. with or don't know somebody who deals with something along the lines of irritable bowel syndrome, whatever. And there's still a lot of people who don't know about, you know, SIBO, and there's just so much to be dealt with. So everyone hypothetically could fit into that kind of model approach of approaching healthcare. It's just a matter of how necessary it is and how far you have to go digging to apply that kind of model to each given person.
Right. Well, yeah, and there are, as you said, it's just the complexities. Like, I'm listening to you and there's just so many different pieces to the pie. And, you know, we've, you know, grown up in this country that's amazing, as you said, for trauma, the ER, et cetera, surgery. But with chronic illness, you know, you can look at it and just, you know, it can be overwhelming. The environment, the mold, the ticks, the parasites, the bacterias, et cetera, that we can be, what's amazing about the human body is, I think, the tolerance, right? Yeah. You know, I know when I've gone and I've had all my tests, and when I was really sick, I was like, wow, it's kind of amazing that my body's functioning and it has all this going on. Yet I'm really sick, right? And yet I'm really healthy. And sort of, that's sort of fascinating to me, because I find it interesting, maybe not to other people, right? But, yeah. I think that that's what's key right now. And because we are walking through something that none of us have seen before in the pandemic, it makes it even more highlighted of the importance of our immune system and really the work that you do and you bring to light, not only in this, you know, amazing family practice that offers, you know, the basic family care, but you're over and beyond that, bringing to light the complexities that you do and understanding, really wanting to look at it functionally and look at the root cause of what might be causing some of these symptoms that otherwise our medical system, you know, in the past has looked at what I would call more in silos. You know, oh, you're having headaches, you go to the neurologist. Oh, you're having gut issues, you go to the GI. Oh, you're having heart issues, you go to the cardio, you know. So, I think that that's the part that functionally I so appreciate in your practice, because you could simply be like, okay, I'm a family practice and I offer concierge, right? But taking that to the next level of, I want to understand why my patient is suffering these five different things, because scratching your head and saying, well, maybe they're all related, right? Isn't that the really the functional part also is looking beyond the silos, but how the silos interconnect.
Yeah, it is. It's just a different approach. I mean, it's not really, it doesn't have to be, some people talk about the mainstream versus functional approaches, kind of like conflicting or, you know, opposing kind of approaches, but they don't need to be. It's, as opposed to an organ system approach, as you're referring to, right? Neurologist, gastroenterology, these are just different organ systems in the body, whereas the systems that functional medicine looks at are more like hormonal axis. And the hormone, there's hormone impact and intertwining with multiple different organ systems, or the, we talked about the toxin system or the immune health system, right? Those cross over multiple organ systems, if not possibly arguably most to all organ systems in some of those cases, or maybe most of those cases. So it's just a different approach. And I think we, you know, being able to blend them together or integrate them together is always of value. And ultimately, you know, as a practice, our approach is, you know, we don't take a sort of my way or the highway kind of approach. I know people who they only want to practice from a functional approach, right? Or they only want to practice from an allopathic mainstream approach. And so for us, our approach is educate people on the options, be aware that there's, for people who don't know, that there's more out there than just the mainstream approach. For people who only want to take the functional medicine approach, hey, you know, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater on the mainstream. And let people decide. And if they're having trouble deciding, which often happens because this is America and we have all kinds of choices and we're just throwing a lot of info and choices out there, then, you know, we can help people navigate those decisions. But we like to just, you know, it's a lot of it's empowering for people to know, you know, to have better about the tools, about themselves, options.
Well, I think the two key words as we sort of wrap up that I hear you using are the educating part, which I think is key, and the empowerment part. And I always, you know, in my own work, am trying to, you know, I talk about navigating the system and advocating for your health, and the educating and empowerment are equally as important as individuals, that we do have choice, and how fortunate are we to have that choice? You know, do you want to look at it this way or this way? And that's, you know, incredible that, you know, in our country, we are able to do that. Well, thanks so much. I'm so glad we got this time to chat. And, you know, it's always good to see you. And hopefully I get to see you in person sooner than later.
Yeah, you too, Charlotte.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Good thing. Take care.